This is The Topic is Trek, episode 38, for Friday, February 15th, 2019. Every Kes begins with K. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
Ba-ba-bum.
Oh, love that opening. And the show just goes downhill from there. Hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts, and hopefully successfully beaming in to join me, as always, our Mr. Craig Stepp.
Addy-ho.
Well, that was mostly successful. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I am still debating the merits of dilithium versus spores, but we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah, that's a topic for a little bit later on The Topic is Trek.
Ding.
Ah, see, you weren't expecting it so soon, were you?
Dang.
Sprung that one on me.
Dang.
So the episode title is a little nod to the fact that it's Valentine's Day. We're recording the day before Valentine's Day.
That's what that was about. I was wondering, where did you pull that from?
Yeah.
And the show will be out the day after Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there listening.
The love ship.
No, boy.
Of course, today that we're recording, it's Galentine's Day. So I can't share that with you guys. So we'll move on from there. Everybody been okay these past couple of weeks that we've been away? Anything special happened to anybody while we were not recording?
I took another cruise and
another
cruise. I just had to have some comparison notes.
He took February's cruise. Wait till March.
Oh my!
That's the
he's two for two this year.
Got home and had some periodontal work done Monday morning, so my mouth is a little messed up right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's the best plan of attack when you come back from a cruise. I'm going to just chilling in a dentist chair. So yeah,
I did get some really nice sedation medicine. So there's that.
All right. Fair enough. Well, what do you say we open up subspace chatter?
One of these ought to work.
Nope, it didn't work. Try another one.
Okay.
There you go. There you go. All right. Our first story comes to us from a site with a great name. We've used this source before. Red shirts always die. And this is a story about our favorite topic these days.
Vulcan, Alberta, Canada?
Yeah, well, not so much right now. As of late, it seems like Sir Patrick Stewart has been just about everywhere. He has been appearing on numerous television shows while doing press events for his most recent project, The Kid Who Would Be King, which was released a few weeks ago. And lucky for Star Trek fans, everywhere, he can't seem to stop letting slip bits of information about Star Trek Picard. The first item Stewart revealed was that the series does in fact have a title, and sadly, it isn't Star Trek Picard. He let this bombshell drop while talking with RTE in Ireland, and it would appear that the title of the show is a huge spoiler, and Stewart can't reveal it just yet. Quote, I can't even tell you the title of the series. All these things, wait a minute, that's all these things is something completely different, are banned. But I can tell you we are shooting in California and we have some brilliant people working on this show. So it's good to know that things are moving ahead with the show. It's very sad, however, that the show apparently has a title, but there's just no possible way that we could know what the name of the show is.
Unless you went over and read TrekMovie.com.
Why is that?
Because as of, well, I think this was as of today, February 13th, Sonequa Martin Green sat down with legendary interviewer Larry King to talk Star Trek Discovery and the expansion of the Star Trek television universe. She also talked about the upcoming Patrick Stewart vehicle, a new show about Jean-Luc Picard. And she may have spilled the beans as to the show's as yet unannounced title. She says, just this week, Patrick Stewart revealed that the new Picard show has a title, but he did not reveal what it was. When asked about Stewart's return to Trek, Sonequa told Larry King, quote, Patrick Stewart is helming his own Star Trek. It's going to be called Picard. He announced his comeback recently, and it was, goodness, the response was amazing. People are really happy, including me. Earlier in the interview, Martin Green also noted, he is doing Picard, and that was in quotes, when referencing Patrick Stewart's return to the franchise. The new series has been referred to as the Picard Show. Well, thank goodness it's not the Larry King Show.
Yes. Hello.
Picard series. Picard. Star Trek Picard. It's not a total new title. It seemed to be the working title both executive producer Alec Kurtzman and the Hollywood trades have used more recently when referring to the show. This could be what Martin Green is talking about. However, her additional comment about it being called Picard seemed to be more specific. If true, it isn't clear if the name would simply be Picard or Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, she could have been just saying anything. I mean, you know, what are you going to call it? Tribble?
It's I'm not reading too much into it. I think it's a working title. I don't think it's...
Yeah.
This is like a code name thing.
Yeah, okay. Not much of a... I wonder what they're filming over there. The show called... Blue Picard Harvest. On the script. I wonder what that's all about.
Yeah. Blue Harvest.
Exactly. The deadly killer.
So I mean, I agree with you. I think that probably that's still the kicking around just everywhere working title of it that everyone refers to it as. And whether or not they have this other name for the show that Sir Patrick seems to be all excited about, I don't know. But I'm still dubious about that being the title, especially why would he be so excited about that being the title?
Because it's got his name. It's got my family label on it.
I guess so. Vintage year. Well, you know, I think we've talked enough about the new Picard series, called Picard.
No, we haven't.
Wait, why is that?
We must have missed somebody in the cadre of actors.
Yeah, so after the phone died down ringing of all the people that were interested in coming on Picard, oh, here comes Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm.
So she says that she is definitely expressing interest, or she expresses interest in returning for Picard series. Durr.
She's so coming Patrick, back as a Gorn.
Yeah. So, yeah. Why are you painting me green? You'll know in a minute. Just hold on.
Take this foam rock and stand over there.
Yeah. So Patrick Stewart is returning in the iconic series. If we hadn't beaten that horse in the
I had no idea. Really no idea.
So as Jean-Luc Picard for a new Star Trek series, and one of his old friends from Star Trek Next Generation once in. Duh. Oh yeah, I already used duh twice. I shouldn't be doing that.
Let's bring back Will Wheaton.
Yeah. So Whoopi Goldberg played Guinan in Star Trek The Next Generation, the host.
Wait, spoiler alert. Where is it?
Spoiler alert.
Oh. No, that ain't it.
You leave the room, apparently. That's the spoiler. Oh. Yeah.
So she was the host of Enterprise D's 10 Forward Lounge and a wise friend and confidant to Captain Picard. Now that Stewart is returning as Picard, Goldberg isn't opposed to reprising her role as Guinan alongside him. So Goldberg was the second guest on the new podcast from David Tennant.
Everybody's got a podcast.
Huh? I know. Yeah, even Anson Mount does. I was kind of surprised about that. The former star of Doctor Who. Oh, wait, you broke into my sentence, so I ended up having two sentences there. the second period threw me off.
So easy to derail him, isn't it?
Yeah. So Tennant brought up the idea of returning for a new Picard series. And Goldberg says that she hasn't been asked, but she would be open to the idea.
This is the best rumor mill ever. Nobody's asked me, but I'd be interested. Well, who wouldn't say that?
Yeah. Nah, I'll pass. So here's the exchange. So Tennant, would you presumably go back for to Star Trek? Patrick Stewart says he's back at it. Goldberg, I know, but you know, they have not asked me. Tennant says, you need to ask them again. They would probably think you're kidding. Goldberg said, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll put it out there. Tennant said, well, this could be it. We're putting it out there because he's got like 2 subscribers.
Exactly.
Goldberg said, all right, well, I'm putting it out there, right now. And
well, the weird thing about that is that Tennant said that, they probably think you're kidding. And isn't that the story pretty much of what happened when Whoopi Goldberg wanted to be on Star Trek, The Next Generation?
I believe joke about it. And they said, well, hey, let's work it out.
No, she was serious about doing it. And they said, oh, you know, very, you know, that I'm sure Whoopi Goldberg is interested. And she had to go back against it. No, I'm interested in being on this show. And okay. Sure.
Yeah. And that worked out all right.
Yeah. So
hopefully that will work out better this time around. I don't know. So we can just add her to the, you know, if you had one of those cartoons, it'd be the long scroll that somebody would just rolling down the hall.
Santa checking his list.
Exactly.
oh, by the way, Danny DeVito just called.
Yes.
He's interested.
I did not know that. And Michael Douglas said, well, Danny's in, I'm in too. So, yeah. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger said, well, if they're in, I'm in. So it's like, everybody's going to be on this show. And
it's
probably
a Picard series as a sequel to Twins.
I would love it if it's like, just, if it's just Patrick Stewart, like no one else is on this show.
He's just sitting in a chair.
Oh, that would be ironic on all these rumor mills, wouldn't it? That would be fun. Yeah.
Now, jumping his
super
memoirs.
Excited for this. Finally, I can sit down.
Jumping back to that Larry King interview, Sonequa Martin-Green also hinted that Michelle Yeoh has a spinoff in the works. How's that for a segue for you?
It is.
Well, funny thing about that, writing for Star Trek Section 31 series has already started. Thank you very much.
I want to see this. I'm looking forward to this show.
Well, last week's episode of Star Trek Discovery, well, at this point, last week's Point of Light, introduced a new Section 31 storyline for the show. This was led by Michelle Yeoh's Emperor Giorgio, who is now an operative for the Federation's nefarious Black Ops organization, first introduced in Star Trek Deep Space Nine and seen again in Enterprise and Star Trek Into Darkness. The Discovery storyline could be seen as giving the first hints about the new Section 31 series featuring Yeoh that was announced to be in development in January. As we reported last week from the coverage at TCA, which I believe is the Television Critics Association convention, this Section 31 show is still considered to be in development and still has not been given a full series order. Unlike the Picard show, just calling it the Picard show, that goes into production this spring, and the animated show Star Trek Lower Decks. Now, more details reported from TCA add more info on the status of the show, including when it may show up on CBS All Access. Speaking to the press at TCA, executive producer Alex Kurtzman revealed that the Section 31 series showrunners and Discovery writer and co-executive producer, now her first name, she's given me permission by a tweet back and forth. I'm going to pronounce it Bowie Kim and Erica Lippold are already working on the new show. Comicbook.com quotes Kurtzman saying, we, Erica and Bowie, are writing it now. So we're breaking story now. And they're amazing. And they're a big part of Discovery. So they're on our staff too. So they're doing double duty this year. And our hope is that we'll have scripts in the next couple of months.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, because you would imagine there would obviously be some overlap.
Right. I'm assuming that this show would also be shooting, you know, up in Canada. The staff would migrate back and forth between the shows, and probably you're going to have some crossover between the casts at various times. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it makes sense for that, for all that to happen.
The bald gentleman who was on the Section 31 ship with Giorgio, did he or did he not look familiar, like your typical badass bad guy who usually has a scar on his face and bad guy? That actor looks really familiar. If not that actor, that persona.
Yeah. Well, he was, if I'm remembering this correctly, he was the one in that deleted scene from the end of last season that they showed him going in and putting the black badge on the table in the
You're right.
So I'm sure we could come up with what his name is, but yeah, I definitely looks like, you know, there's some badassery afoot.
Leland.
That was pretty quick research.
Alan Van Sprague as Leland.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to look him up. I swear he's appeared on some other, he looks like he could be fighting against John McClane.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
All right. We are done with stories that reference Picard
already
at the moment. Already. I know it's only halfway through the show at this point, and we're already done with Picard stuff. So let's move on. Let's do a complete change of pace with our next story.
We're going back to Discovery. This is from the dailypost.co.uk. North Wales Live reports the Welsh language has been broadcast into the final frontier thanks to the latest series of Star Trek. Millions who tuned in for the second series of Star Trek Discovery, which premiered on Netflix last week, will have heard Welsh being spoken. The new series is set 10 years before the original Star Trek, of course, and details the Cold War between the Klingon race and the United Federation of Planets. The latest episode follows the crew of the USS Discovery when they're suddenly jolted from warp by a mysterious spherical field that is interfering with the technology on the ship. As a result, the Universal Translator, which translates everyone's native language into English, malfunctions and becomes inoperational, which I found interesting because people were speaking their non-native languages. That was the hard part to believe. Or was that just for our confusion?
I think it was our confusion. I think probably the Universal Translator was malfunctioning, not functioning at all.
Oh, okay. Because if it wasn't functioning, we would have heard people speaking their native languages and look like, anyway. The crew are left speaking a variety of different Earth languages, including Norwegian, German, and Italian, as well as non-human languages such as Andorian. Human Starfleet Communications Officer R.A. Bryce explains in Welsh that the sphere answers their hails, resulting in the cacophony. Star Trek fan Lone Telfrin heard the use of Welsh and told Gulg360, I don't even know if I'm close on that because I don't speak Welsh, but I'll try to swallow my tongue at the same time, that he thought it would help in the language's international profile. The fact that Netflix has considered using the Welsh language is a big thing, he said. A lot of people around the world.
I don't think he said thang. I don't think that's Welsh. I don't think that's Welsh at all.
Yeah.
I can't do Welsh. I can't do much anything else. A lot of people around the world have their interest piqued by hearing it being spoken. Although producers have not attempted to subtitle the language with text simply reading, speaking Welsh. I could pick out maybe two languages that they were speaking. Chinese, obviously, when Michael Burnham started speaking, I don't know if it was Mandarin or Cantonese. I couldn't tell you the difference from my dumb American ears. But there were a couple in there that fortunately they did translate a couple. That's Klingon!
Right. Yeah, I think they had to because you had to, say what they're actually saying, because the audience is going to go, well, I don't understand any of this either. I mean, certainly don't think we're going to pick up on, oh, I recognize that Welsh phrase. No one's going to say that. I mean, but I thought it was interesting, this article, for a couple of reasons. One, that they were very excited that they used a whole sentence or two in Welsh.
Ach, your mother rides a vacuum cleaner.
They used thang. And and second, it's interesting when you're outside the United States and Canada that it's not a reference to CBS All Access using this thing. Mm-hmm. It's Netflix using this thing, because that's where most of the world watches Star Trek Discovery. I thought that was that made that that article interesting in a couple of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. Right.
But let's speaking of Discovery, there was almost a problem.
A wardrobe malfunction on Discovery.
Yes, actually there was.
Yeah, Janet Jackson was beamed onto the Discovery, and
but that's another story.
Yeah. So as it turns out, a little bit of CG magic is what saved the day on Discovery. Speaking to comicbook.com, Discovery costume designer Gersha Phillips revealed that the show's take on the classic style uniforms seen in the original Star Trek almost went a bit awry. Worn in Discovery's second season premiere by Captain Pike and the crew of the Enterprise, before the former jumped ship to take temporary command of the Discovery, the uniforms actually had something pretty major missing when they were made, and no one noticed until the four uniforms were on set and ready to film the rank insignia on the sleeves.
Whoops!
Now it's an honest mistake. Now, none of us were there to correct it, so...
That's true. That's why.
I thought maybe they were going to be missing the Delta shield or something.
Just pop it on. Anyway, so now it's an honest mistake, especially considering that for the rest of the Discovery, the costume team doesn't seem to think about adding the ranks to the costumes they create, as the Discovery crew uniforms signify rank on the comm badge rather than anywhere on the else on the costume. And as the Constitution class uniforms were pretty much merging of the materials and style used in the uniforms with the classic colors and the original Trek, no one considered the rank insignia until it was too late.
Oops.
I would like to think I would notice something like that.
All they have to do is look at the little cartoon in the left margin on this article and they'll see it.
Let me pause for a second to point something out amusing. We're talking about a problem with the uniforms. What's wrong with the picture that's there?
All the Delta shields are on the wrong side.
The photo was backwards, so everybody's Delta shield is on the wrong side.
Yeah.
All right. So moving. So back to the article.
Again, refer to the animated show, right, and you can see they're right.
Scotty doesn't part his hair on that side.
Yeah. So thankfully, after it was noticed, the fix was pretty simple, and it did involve Phillips and her team staying up all night to sew on the right insignia onto the new uniforms. The crew having to reshoot days of footage, blah, blah, blah. Instead, the ranks you see on the costumes in the first episode, some of them were added post production via CG.
Interesting. Now,
yeah. So if you ever rewatch the premiere, keep an eye on their sleeves, which, you know, I figured they could probably match it up and put them on there and do it the rest of the time. So, yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is I was at first going to go back and take a look, and I may at some point, but you don't know which of the first scenes that they filmed. I'm sure they didn't film in order. So ones they put the CG in randomly, this scene and that scene. And of course, it would be also interesting if you can't quite tell, then they did a good job of doing that. But it sounds like a lot of work either way.
Yeah.
To do something like that.
And it's obviously cheaper to do it in CG than go back and reshoot the scene. I've done a minimum of video production work, not quite on that scale, but when even at my small scale, when you see something missing in an earlier scene, you're like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
How do you
coffee
fix
pot it? Was over there, not over here.
Yeah. Remember when we were doing the Technorama promo video, Craig? He's like, headphones on, headphones off. Oh, yeah. What is going on?
Yeah. Right. Hey, by the way, a side note, I like their the TOS style shirt uniforms they got in Discovery.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense that you're looking at it as taking the Discovery uniform and simplifying it to be what they are moving to, because they, you know, that's the Pike makes the comment, well, we have the new uniforms.
And they're colorful.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know people have to go, yes, but that's not the uniform that they had in the original pilot. It was more of it wasn't a sweater, but it was, was it like one piece, top, kind of like a turtleneck all one color type of thing. So this is more what they ended up going to for series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't have everything. So everyone is just a show. Just relax.
Yeah. Hey, point, nice line.
Yeah, but I also remember, and I can't remember the details, but I seem to remember that in the Kelvin movies, this issue also came up because the women's uniforms, I can't remember, it's because they had short sleeves, and I think it was just the women's uniforms, did not have rank insignia sleeves either. And they changed that for, now it might have been the second movie, might have been the third. I want to say it was the second. I'm probably incorrect on that. It might have been the third, but so this is not the first time that rank on the sleeves issue has come up in the Trek universe. But okay, we will move on and talk about, we were just mentioning the animated episodes, the Star Trek Lower Decks. In a related note, composer Michael Giacchino to direct an animated Star Trek episode. Michael Giacchino is known as one of the best composers working in films and television today, but the prolific musician is beginning to flex some different creative muscles. After making his directorial debut last year with a short film, Giacchino will head to the final frontier and direct a Star Trek episode for CBS All Access. Reading more about the upcoming Michael Giacchino Star Trek episode. So he's already got a Grammy and an Emmy and an Oscar, but he's going to go behind the scenes and he's going to do an episode of a short Trek that's animated. And apparently that Giacchino's first trip into space was not this one, because obviously he did the music for Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Star Trek Beyond. And he also did a short film, which I was not able to locate, which was the film they were referring to, that came out last year, I believe. So this will be interesting to see what happens with this. I know that we've already learned that there will be a couple of animated short Treks, and it's interesting because they're not part of Lower Decks, and it's going to be kind of hard to communicate that at first when you talk, oh, animated Trek, I know what's going on with that. Well, this is not the same thing. This is something completely different. I think Alex Kurtzman talked about these all having different styles, different takes on things. So much more experimental pieces of work for these short Trek ones, just kind of like some of the episodes of the short Treks we already had were, that they kind of just touched on different things and had different looks, especially things like Calypso. No timeline on when this is going to be coming out. Obviously, this stuff will be happening after the season ends for Star Trek, season two for Star Trek Discovery. But how much longer after that? We don't have timelines on any of this stuff yet.
Hey, for stating that they didn't want to change or turn CBS All Access into a 24/7 Star Trek thing, they're not doing a good job of that.
Well, there's still lots of other stuff on CBS All Access.
But also keep in mind that so far all we've seen is Star Trek Discovery. So we have two other things announced, and I suppose the short Treks animated is a third thing, because we have Picard is going into production. We have Lower Decks going into production, and we have more short Treks going into production. But all we're hearing about all these different things are being churned out, and you know what their timelines are. Are we not going to see anything else until next year after Discovery's over? So I'd like to know at some point about when things are going to premiere. I know that we had in the last show, there was an article that seemed to indicate that the Picard series will premiere before the end of the year, but we have no date for that. So far,
I already gave you the date.
Did you?
December 31st.
Ah, yes. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Maybe right, the 30th.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, just not, you don't want to cut it too close to the wire. You want to give a little bit of leeway there. All right. So let's talk a bit about something that's involving Discovery, but in a very strange way.
You say that.
I just did.
All right. This is from appleinsider.com, or if you prefer, AppLinesider. Depends how you parse up your letters. The latest episode of Apple's Carpool Karaoke features the cast of CBS All Access' Star Trek Discovery, or if you're outside the United States, it'd be Netflix Star Trek Discovery, serenading the target audience from the bridge set of the eponymous Star Trek starship. So hosting Mary Wiseman, Doug Jones, Sonequa Martin-Green, and Anthony Rapp. It's Starship Karaoke this time, and is four of the cast of Star Trek Discovery perform tracks, including David Bowie's Space Oddity, as they drive around Toronto, Canada, giving passers-by the Vulcan salute. Well, it's better than the Vulcan hello.
Yes.
And unusual highlight of the episode is the actors also singing in character in Starfleet uniform, in one case, in full alien makeup, on the bridge of the USS Discovery. Oh, that's too much. For this scene, they sing a reworked version of the song Seasons of Love from the musical Rent. Anthony Rapp, Paul Stamets on Discovery, of course, takes the lead and continues a tradition. Stamets was first person to play Mark Cohen in the 1996 Broadway production of the play, and again in the subsequent film and 2009 revival, together with Sonequa Martin-Green, Michael Burnham, Mary Wiseman, Tilly, and Doug Jones, who we all know as Saru. Rapp sings new lyrics devoted to celebrating the nerds who have made and the nerds who have watched Star Trek through the years. There's one reason the franchise thrives, they sing. The answer is nerds. Thanks to the nerds. Shout out to the nerds. A full 15-minute episode is available to watch on Apple TV and Apple iOS TV app. You can also see it on Apple Music on Mac. Star Trek Discovery airs CBS All Access in the USA and on Netflix internationally.
Did you watch it, Clinton?
Well, I don't have the Apple service, so I've seen a couple of clips. I've seen this video they did of their take on Rent, mm-hmm. which I believe I posted over on the Topic is Trek's Facebook page. Oh, yeah. And the one where they're driving around trying to get people to give them the Vulcan salute back, and you have these, you know, they're just all in the car. I don't think people can necessarily tell who they are a lot of times. Yeah. Just putting the hand out the window doing that, and they get a decent number of people, and then occasionally someone will go, oh, and the car stops, and they come over, and they talk to them for a bit. So I haven't had a chance to see the entire thing. I was, you know, this is an offshoot, obviously, of James Corden's bit that he would do on his show of Carpool Karaoke, yeah. And I was hoping it was going to be on YouTube, but apparently now it's spun off as this Apple series, yeah. And so you have to use that service to watch it.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm going to go check it out. I remember reading I knew that Apple was doing some original content, and I thought they were going to have it available for free with ads. So I was like, okay, I'm willing to watch some ads to check this out. And I was like, I got a subscribe pass.
Yeah.
Hard pass. I'm not doing that.
So I'm hoping at some point, you know, it gets released just for general consumption, as you know, they complete the show probably does have seasons to it. So maybe, you know, like things go to Netflix after a season is over, maybe they'll just release this out when that's all done.
Yeah.
But, the Rent one is pretty funny though. And yeah, 'cause the first thing I think of is, wait a minute, he did this song in Rent. This is very bizarre. And then everybody's in their costumes, and Doug Jones has gotten dressed up in all this makeup for this. This is rather elaborate suddenly. And all the bridge is all lit up and working. And so this was not a cheap shoot.
No, this is not a dash cam thing.
Absolutely not. Not for this part, at least. All right. So
dash cam
from the sublime to the ridiculous we go.
Sign me up.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out the context of this whole thing, but this Star Trek Klingon blade seized from Widnes Teen's bedroom. I assume Widnes is some place, right?
Yes.
It's from the BBC, the Widnes so it's protection program. Hey,
yeah. They had a Widnes protection program. All right, so a replica of a weapon wielded by a race of alien warriors in the sci-fi TV show Star Trek has been, you know, they could just say Klingons because everybody would know that by now, had been seized by police from a 17-year-old boy's bedroom. So the 4-foot Klingon batleth and other weapons, which were, some of which were homemade, were found after the team was arrested after an assault and witness. The 14-year-old boy was injured in the attack in Queensbury Way, Upton Rocks, just after 1800 hours on the 24th of January. 3 other boys, aged 14, 15, and 16, were also held after raids on Friday. All 4 were arrested on suspicion of assault occasioning bodily harm and had been released on conditional bail. So Cheshire Belief, huh?
Yeah. The thing that struck me about, and they have 2 photos, by the way, all the articles that we're talking about, you can find over in the show notes for episode 38 at thetopicistrek.com. But there are 2 photos of all the weapons seized. And it's very bizarre because you have all sorts of hand bladed weapons, knives a cleaver, some flip knives,
a crossbow pistol and a bow.
Right. You have a crowbar and there's a bow. So presumably there were arrows as well, all that stuff. And then a batleth.
Right.
Nothing else. One of these things is not like the others type of, it just.
Actually, you know what struck me as I looked at this, of course the batleth does kind of stand out, but you look at all the knives, I'm like, that's normal for here where I live. I've never heard of the police seizing everybody's knives.
Yeah. I think that the article talks about the fact that there's a certain ruling that they're able to confiscate these things in cases like this. But I don't know. There's an untold story going on here and I don't know what it is.
Well, I do know that, and I was not aware of this until the last maybe a couple of years, that in the UK you can't have, and I don't know whether where all this matters, but you can't have locking blade knives.
Mm. Interesting.
You know, that's why you have like a Swiss Army knife. You know, they're stiff when, you know, when they lock, and they don't really lock, but when in their open position.
Yeah.
But they can just easily collapse. But of course, why does that matter when you can carry around a fixed blade knife in a sheath? You know, so I don't know. And I just thought it was hilarious to see the knives that they confiscated. I was like, well, shoot, here, I mean, you're kind of born with a pocket knife.
Which sounds painful for the mother. I'm sorry. I don't
cut your own umbilical, kinda, son.
They hand it to you after birth. Not.
Oh, okay. All right. That's much better. Much better. And for our last story, this comes to us from IO9. Temporal Anomaly is a Star Trek fan film half a decade in the making.
Oh, do tell. Hmm.
First conceived and pitched to Kickstarter backers in 2013, Temporal Anomaly is an ambitious fan project set in the Star Trek universe, a nearly hour-long fan film created by Power 543 Fan Films. Set at a nexus in time, colliding the past and the future of Star Trek, this ambitious production makes use of the same special effects software used to create the imagery for Voyager, Enterprise, and Deep Space Nine.
They definitely stole the font.
Yes. Whether or not this fan film works for you, it's still a dang impressive feat. The first and second parts are both available on YouTube. The first is above in the article, and you can find the second here. Again, we have links to all this in our show notes. All told, that's a lot of Trek, such an substantial amount, in fact, that it required a special dispensation from CBS to let it get around certain guidelines the company set up for fan films. Because both parts, well, the first part that I watched, I noted the time, it was 25 minutes. And then they went on to a second part, which was long. I'm not sure if it was the same length. And as we know, the rules are now 15 minutes tops. You can have a second 15 minute, but that's it. So they definitely had to get special. Also, Doug Drexler worked on this, and he is associated with Star Trek. So you have that. The thing I wanted to mention here as well is that a fellow podcaster or YouTuber slash podcaster, Samuel Coggins, who co-runs Trek Yards, and you can find that channel on YouTube, is the driving force behind this. So if you're familiar with Trek Yards, well, you might know about this already, but if not, go to the show notes for our episode and you can watch the show. Now, it has the same pluses and minuses of most fan films that you, and CBS guidelines talk about the fact you can't have professional actors that were involved with the series and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So these are amateur people working on this, being the actors. And you, it's the same thing you have to deal with in most cases with a fan film. So I wouldn't say that that is something that should, you know, stop you from bothering to watch it. Obviously, the special effects, and that's one of the things that Trek Yards is known for, and Samuel does a lot of, are renderings and animations of Starfleet vessels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that part of it is really spot impressive. On. Absolutely.
Hey, I didn't mean to cut on the people that were acting in there. I was just like, but I don't see any SAG cards floating around.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of one of those CBS things anyway. It's, you know, even if they were planning on having somebody in there like that, CBS probably said, look, we'll let you finish this because it was already in production. And so I don't know.
The attorneys for CBS were like, fine, just quit calling us.
They'll never make any money off of this one.
And you know what sets this one different than Axanar? I'm assuming one of the differences, probably the amount raised. Another thing might be the talent you were planning on having in it. And
well, so and they did approach him ahead of time, you know. What's the word I'm looking for? Contacting them about it.
Yeah. So, you know, good on them. Good on Samuel and the team for getting this made and out there. And it's got a lot of views. So a lot of work went into it. And good job, guys. All right. And that does it for our subspace chatter. But I want to remind you that not only do we have links to all these stories that we talked about. So if you want to look at pictures of all those knives, if you want to have a link to this fan film, you want to check out any of those things, find out what else Patrick Stewart is revealing about Picard, go to the show notes for episode 38 over at thetopicistrek.com. And in addition to the stories we covered, the show notes also have links to a bunch of stories we didn't have time to cover.
13 more of them, if I count right.
So you've got plenty of Star Trek news to hold you over until the next episode, if you go over to thetopicistrek.com. You can also check out my reviews of the Star Trek Discovery episodes as those air. All right, let's come back from our subspace chatter. Press a couple of buttons and see if you can get us back here. I said a couple of buttons. That was way too many buttons.
You're blowing the budget, buddy.
Our production costs are out of the water.
Whoa.
But now it's time to head out, and hopefully we've got the warp core balance again. It's time to head out on our main mission.
Warp
core. Fire up the warp.
There we go.
Warp drive.
Oh, we picked the slow one again.
I can't change the laws of physics.
I bet you can.
Well, let's head out. This time we're going to be talking about the second two episodes of season two of Star Trek Discovery, Point of Light and An Obel for Sharon. What I'm going to do this time around is I'm going to give the plot summaries of both of these. And if it wasn't apparent ahead of time, spoiler alert, if you have not seen these episodes of Star Trek Discovery,
spoiler alert.
In Point of Light, a surprise visit visitor to the USS Discovery brings shocking news about Spock and dredges up a past regret for Burnham. Following the asteroid incident, Tilly struggles to keep a grip on her reality. Laurel's authority on Kronos is threatened. And in the second episode, an obol for Sharon, a mysterious sphere threatens the USS Discovery, even as May, in her original form, implements a plan that puts Tilly's life in danger. Saru and Burnham's bond grows when Saru is forced to acknowledge a deeply unsettling Kelpian truth. Pike receives new intel on Spock from a loyal friend. All right, so those are our two synopses, and I have a couple of discussion points, but this is kind of free form about what you guys want to talk about with these two episodes. I have down a couple of things like, in the first one, Point of Light, we spent a lot of time on Kronos. And one of my problems is that, well, for Laurel to be a good leader, it seemed like such a tactical error for her to have Ash Tyler there, because you know that's immediately going to be something that all the, you know, remain Klingons are going to just go, what is going on here?
There's a big wart in our midst.
Yeah. So I don't know. Do any of you think it was a good idea for him to be there in the first place?
Not given their history. I mean, I can see how she might have thought it was a good idea to bridge this, to keep the consistency. Oftentimes when you're dealing with opposing cultures, it helps to have that intermediary, and he could have been that intermediary. So I can understand, you know, how she may have thought that was a good idea at one point.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he had just been in that role, right, not be her second, if you will, but be appointed ambassador or I don't know, something like that, and really not been.
Well, he had Torchbearer on his resume, so that worked.
He did. That
is ship
true.
Designer.
Yeah, well, yeah, what do we think about seeing a classic Klingon battle cruiser?
That was interesting. I thought it was more interesting to see her. I thought it was more interesting to see her hold her baby's head in her hand.
Well, yeah, that too.
Well, it also helps bring that gap closer to what we know, what we're familiar with in TOS, because, right, you know, instead of having the ships that I'm going to say organic, this is about the ones they're kind of artistic, to something that looks a little more on the level of Starfleet, you know, like a battle cruiser.
Right. So, and I like the logic that they were using to try to, you know, now bring this in, that you're not all going to have separate looking ships, and you're not going to have all separate houses, and you're not going to do all this kind of stuff. It's the Klingon Empire as one thing. And so that's the direction she's trying to go with this. So to me, that made sense. I can't think that they're just going to say, okay, great, we'll just scrap every ship that we've got.
Yeah. Start over.
Recycle the ship of the dead.
Exactly. Put those bodies to good use again.
Scrape those barnacles off the... Oh, those are coffins. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Oops. Sorry.
I think having them around is probably makes sense. I mean, they're... Laurel and him are in together, hooking up or whatever. And then now he's obviously the father of a child that he didn't know about. And so... Of course, he's making his mark on the whole empire himself by designing the D7.
And now he's kind of off with Section 31.
Yep.
Instead.
Yep.
So
with the baby.
In the monastery or the monkery or whatever.
The baby's
it is.
On that. On the monkery. Yeah, there's a lot of monkery going on that planet.
And, monkery business.
That's what got him the baby to begin with.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I wonder, do you think that we will see the child again? Because they made a point of saying where he's going and I'm thinking, you know, that's a thread you can pick up later on.
Again, I think you already have.
We did?
Well, that's I did. That's one of the stories we didn't get to.
Yeah.
You want to expand on that a bit, yeah. Craig?
That he is the albino Klingon you see on Deep Space Nine.
So
does that fit the timeline? That's too long.
How long do Klingons live if they don't get killed off?
Yeah, I don't know what a Klingon's lifespan is.
That's true. Offhand. We don't know that, do we?
Well, you know, Vulcans are supposed to be live, what, 150-ish or more years, 200
okay,
years?
Okay, Google. What's the lifespan of a Klingon?
Yeah, that answer's coming back real quick.
It didn't work.
you broke it.
What is the lifespan of a Klingon? It won't answer.
So it says that Odo observed that Kor must be 100 years old, and his best friend Koloth was probably 150 years old.
Well, that's true. Showed up on Deep Space Nine. They were old men, mm-hmm. and that fits in with Kirk's timeline. So, yeah, I don't know if they're as long-lived or maybe approximately the same as Vulcans.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
It is a theory.
So he's a baby at this point, so he would have even more of a chance to be that old enough to be on Deep Space Nine.
I wonder if that was intentional by the writers.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know. Some things they do just amaze me at how just they take off on a different tangent and go, well, that didn't match up with
anything.
Well, here
you go. Here's the story. I can put a link to it. Well, we do have a link to it in the article, in our show notes. But yeah, there's a whole article where there's the picture of him. And yeah, anyway, get the idea.
Okay.
Yeah. So could very well be. What did you guys think about the introduction of this very, very high-tech Section 31 ship and, you know, Giorgio having what looked to be like technology that allowed her to just change her face by, which I'm not sure we had seen that before. Maybe we had, because that's a common thing that will happen in sci-fi is you have the ability to change the way your face looks, but
or make your helmet go, you know, go behind your head.
Yes, well, that's a different story altogether. But it was a very big ship, not like the ship that we saw in Star Trek Into Darkness wasn't huge, and that was like a Section 31 project going on. But it seemed like a rather elaborate vehicle.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. It's, you know, for covert operations. It's where we got the cutting edge of the cutting edge.
I'm also wondering if the reason it was so elaborate and, you know, we get to see the ship and how the nacelles unfold and all that type of stuff is because, well, we're developing this stuff for the Section 31 series. We might as well go all in and really, mm-hmm. you know, flesh out this set as much as we can. And then in our second episode, we have more problems for Tilly. I mean, Tilly is just like, I don't know. I mean, she thought she was going insane in the first episode. And then in the second episode, she gets put in a cocoon. She gets a hole drilled in her head. She, you know, has a thing attached to her a second time. She gets sucked into some void someplace. What are they doing to Tilly?
She's in for the long haul, that's for sure.
Yeah. We're all confused because she's talking to somebody that only she can see. And I think it's a gateway for Culver to come back is what's going to happen.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, that this idea of bringing someone from our universe into wherever this part is in the mycelial network. And then, well, if something can go in theory, something can come out.
But it didn't
as well.
May didn't come out as May. She was just tapping into Tilly's memories as organism.
But it looks like they're bringing, and again, one of the things I want to emphasize is that, yes, I know we've seen that there are photos out there of the next episode. I've made a point of not. Yeah, I've made a point of not looking at the general promo images, but sometimes they tell you more than you want to know. So mm-hmm. I have not looked at those. But the idea that if you're bringing someone in again, is there some way to also extract someone from there?
Hmm.
And I'm assuming that that's,
well, that's what I thought that happen. That big blob was going to be, you know, where like, what is it? And then, you know, it showed the hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it formed. So I was like, okay, something's going to happen with this. It's like, you know, Brundlefly is going to come out of the thing in a minute.
I find it interesting what the writers are doing on this show, because sometimes it feels like they've got too many irons in the fire on a particular yes. episode. Like, we've got the sphere, we got this thing attacking Tilly, we've got Saru getting sick. Which of these items are related and which aren't? And I found that interesting, how they're tying up some, but leaving others dangling. This is really an interesting writing style that I'm finding in this show. At some points, you feel like, is any of this even related? And you know you're telling yourself, yes, some of these are going to lead to a conclusion to this episode, but it some of them are more overarching, and that's got to be craziness when you're in the writing room.
Right. I mean, this is one of those things where you put up the big board and you just kind of have this flow chart of this has got to lead to here, here, and all that type of stuff.
I mean, I'm watching some of these episodes going, I don't even know what to pay attention to anymore. There's so many details. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to watch this series again after the series concludes to go, okay, that's how we got from A to B to N to Q to R, just all over the place. Because some of them really are just, I'm losing some of the finer points trying to pay attention to whatever we're trying to pay attention to.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, that was the point of my article that I wrote for this episode, that there was just, in my opinion, too much going on. And I've heard that from some other people, the same feeling. And the benefit that I have is that I watch each episode at least 3 times to write the review.
Right.
So I get a chance to process it a bit more. And I've told people, well, the second time through, it's a lot easier, but still.
Some of them are like loose ends. You don't know where they're going to go.
And there were so many plot threads going at the same time, I felt it was too much, that they have to stop adding new plot threads, because we have the red signals, we have the red angel, we have what happened to Spock, we have what happened to the Enterprise, mm-hmm. we have what happened to Tilly, we have what is going to happen with Saru now that he's going to do it. It's just like there's the Burnham's relationship with Spock, it's just there's, you really got to start to focus a bit. And I'm hoping that we turn a corner and, to your point, merge some of these things together real soon, that, okay, there's not 3 things here. There's one.
Right. That's what I was getting at as well, is there's a lot of threads going through here, and God bless the writers for keeping them straight, but I'm having a hard time at this point, and it is feeling a bit fractured, and let's pull it together.
I still think all of this, everything you're seeing is stemming from the Red Angel thread, and it's actually pulling them through a certain path to make these things happen, to make Culber come back, to make to do the thing with the church, all these things are to save that planet organism that had to download its stuff before it died. I think it's the common thread that's bringing it. It's pulling them through.
Yeah. I mean, I am hoping, however, that sometimes some of the things happening in the episodes are not directly related to that,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like that's almost like too many threads tied into one thing. I don't think Saru's story
that's the other thing. I think Saru evolved and didn't realize that he could evolve.
Mm-hmm. I
think it's just the next stage of his life that none of their species ever got to.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing, is that he realizes what every Kelpian would experience were they not taken.
Yeah, almost and like so a metamorphosis being transferred into a caterpillar to a butterfly. No one ever got past being eaten as a caterpillar on their planet.
Well, we don't know about it. We don't know if eaten yet. Everybody keeps saying eaten, and I don't know if that's true. We don't
they were,
know.
They were taken for some culling or harvest or whatever.
In the mirror universe, they were eaten.
Yeah, they were, and they tasted delish. But in this universe, we don't know what the Ba'ul are doing.
Sure.
You know, with them at that point.
I think the Red Angel is doing this to bring things to light, like Saru, you know, like Tilly, Culber, the whole thing. So I think there's a reason why it's dragging them through this whole process to bring enlightenment to Saru or, you know, that kind of thing.
The first thing I thought of when Amanda and Michael were there with that image of the Red Angel that was static on the screen for so long, I thought that would make an awesome t-shirt.
I was thinking an album cover for a 90s hairband.
I was thinking, you know, you get burn on your screen if you just leave it there too long.
Burn them. I hardly knew him.
There we go.
Hardly knew her.
Do we think that Reno is now going to be the chief engineer on Discovery, or is she still just passing through?
I don't know that Stamets is done yet or not. He's still highly involved in the show. I know he said he was going to the Vulcan Science Academy, but obviously we haven't gotten anywhere near there yet.
Yeah, but he would not be the chief engineer on the ship because that's not what he does. You need it if you're going to rely more on the warp drive and the impulse engines, you need a normal chief engineer.
I do like her duct tape and chewing gum attitude, though. It's starting to grow on me.
I hope it does not one of those things where I get really tired of it. But right now, I'm fine. But yeah, I'm just like, okay, she's a little sarcastic and dry, which I'm fine with. But I can see where that could get old if they overdo it.
Yeah, I felt like between the first episode and this one, it was the ratio of what I've done to my sarcastic comment about it was a little high to on the sarcastic side, that we do get the underpinning that she knows what she's doing because, you know, she saved all the members of the crew and, you know, she's going to work and help create this thing they need to put into Tilly to communicate and so forth. So we get that. I feel like we just need to dial that back. Like all the characters have that same problem though. When they first show up is okay. We're a little bit too much of this, not enough of that type of mixture.
I kind of liked the sword sparring that she and Stamets were doing just to kind of square off and let each other know where they stand. I don't have any reservations about, is it going to go too far? Is this going to carry on?
She pulled a blowtorch out on Tilly. I was going, hold on a second here now.
Hey, I did like her whole picking her mushroom off her pizza thing.
Yes.
that struck a chord with me, so that's fine.
Yeah. That's funny.
And do you think we'll see number one again? That appearance by number one was super short.
I loved how a few episodes ago we made such a big deal about that one still shot of them sitting at the table. It was like, they're and gone. It's like, really? That's what all the hubbub was about? She passed him a clipboard.
Yeah, the picture, the way they took the picture, it did look like she was looking at him kind of long. I thought there was something there, but then when you watch the whole scene, it's like
there's nothing.
They're barely even looking at each other. Well, he's staring at her, but
they're on a similar frame of mind because, you know, once again, we're in agreement. It's like, okay, so she's a good first officer kind of thing.
Right.
Well,
I think it was just a teaser. I think she'll be back on her.
Obviously. Yeah. And, you know, you begin to wonder when we're talking about all the stuff that's going on in the Enterprise, you know, all the systems are down. And of course we had in the first episode that we're talking about, you already had, Pike saying, I don't want to use the holograms. I'm just want to, you know, use the screen for this. And now suddenly, rip it all out. We're just going to communicate with screens. And I wonder, All right. When the Enterprise shows back up again, how much of a difference is it going to have to it? I mean, it's not going to dry dock for a complete refit type of thing. And we never really saw that much of the inside, but.
They refit it to look like the old 60s.
Yeah.
They put up the Christmas wrapping paper on the ceiling.
Well, we redecorated
the place.
We took some sandpaper to the edges and kind of filed those off and rounded everything. And it looks much better now.
Put some plastic stuff on the wall to make it look like it's a pipe.
GNDN, what is that supposed to mean? Never mind. We'll explain that later. All right. So any more thoughts on these two episodes?
A bit chaotic, but I want to see where they're going because they fooled us last season and I want to see how it ties together this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's definitely. True.
I'm liking it. I'm enjoying Anson Mount as Pike. I think he's doing a good job embodying that character.
You had a question in here, Clinton, about do you think he was right to, you know, getting ready to fire so soon? He wanted to blow that sphere out of the water.
Yeah, it just seemed a little odd that knowing what you know about the things that he's already said about the mission and, you know, discovery and contact and all that type of thing, it almost felt like, well, because I've got to get to where Spock is, if we can't break free in the next 30 seconds, just fire, you know, phasers and photon torpedoes at it.
I was starting to think that until I realized the ship was in danger. The thing was overheating. They knew they were in danger. We've got to get out of here. When you're in danger, you know, the scientific discovery stuff starts to go out the window. So I don't know that it was premature, but it did feel a little forced at times.
Well, there was an article, and I wish I read the whole thing, but there was it touched on how they tie in a little bit to the low tech side of things, and part of it was ripping out the hologram. But then you got somebody's attitude, like Pike, where he's willing to, shoot and hightail it out of there, kind of, you know, almost an adventurous, not adventurous, not a good word, but for what I'm trying to say, but. What are you saying? Well, like you get Kirk, you know, he's not necessarily a high tech guy, but he's on a high tech ship and he's good at making the decisions that have to be made. And I don't know. That's just where I wish I read the whole article. See,
you know,
we're just giving our reading.
Yeah. Reading. Highly overrated. all the readers out there, my apologies. I'm just kidding. Something I was thinking of today is, and I don't have any feelings about it one way or the other, but we have all these different shows being announced. What are the odds that you would have a Pike led series? What do you think the odds are?
I think
it would be good.
Yeah, the direction we're going now, if Pike is quote unquote an interim captain of Discovery, he's going to go back to the Enterprise.
I think they could
pick up that thread and run that for a while. I'd say it's pretty good.
Yeah. So something possibly. So CBS All Access and Netflix, if you're listening,
more money.
There you go.
By the way, Major Barrett just called. She's interested in getting in on the Pike show.
I did not, even from the grave, people. It's amazing the people that want to be on this show.
Hey, it's amazing she has a cell signal to get in.
Well, you know, you pay a bit extra for it. There's roaming involved.
Leonard Nimoy is right on that bandwagon with her.
On that note, it's time to come back from our main mission.
Where were we?
I don't know where we were. Wherever we were, get us back from there.
All right. Does that work? Ooh,
that was much faster. Very nice. Thank you. It's time for our Warp Speed Roundtable, and this is where we do a very quick topic, and we go around, and we get people's answers to the question. So this time around, the question is...
Kiss.
It's a simple question.
Don't jump the gun, Craig. That was the title of the show. Every cast begins with K.
But it's a simple question. However, it can have many answers. So I'm going to ask it. Who is your least favorite Star Trek character of all time. Now,
oh, the choices.
I will kick things off because I actually ended up with three, and I'm going to go with the ones that I were in the mix were Pulaski.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Give us a couple of reasons why. What's your beef?
She was just an uninteresting character that, you know, had no use for Data and just didn't seem to mix with the crew very well. And
she was arrogant a little bit. I thought.
She just seemed to be, not in the family, if you would, and just kind of on the edges of things. And I understand that the actress had a lot that they had to deal with, the fact that they were replacing Gates McFadden because of negotiations and so forth. And she might've even realized that this is going to be one season and I'm back out again. You know, I don't know, but I think the writing as well, just really, there was nothing to that character. The second one that's my runner up, my second runner up is, and I think her name was Anish, the womanly, and I'm sorry, these are both women here for completely different reasons, but she was the female lead in Insurrection, Picard's love interest.
You didn't like her. Okay.
No, I did not like, I felt the same thing that she.
A little too lightheaded and loopy for you?
No, way too understated, almost to being point of comatose, that I felt like Frakes had given her the note that, you know, you're supposed to be at peace being on this planet, and she took it as the character and like brought her excitement level, her emotion, her everything down so far that I thought, does Picard have a romantic relationship, or does he just want to see, do you have a pulse? Because everyone on this planet is supposed to be able to, you know, regenerate. So I felt that was not the only weak spot, certainly an Insurrection for me, but the one that I'm going with is Lieutenant Malcolm Reed from Enterprise.
Wow.
I
don't like Malcolm.
No, I felt like he was cast wrong. I felt like he was written wrong. I felt like the Mako just walked all over him, and you know, that was really should have been kind of what his character was, and they had to bring in other people to be his character. I don't know. I just did not ever have any use for him. And the guy was always like, oh, I'll stay behind and sacrifice. He was like, had a death wish. And I didn't. So that is my choice and my two runners up. You guys may not have runners up, but let's move on to who wants to go next?
Craig.
Cass.
All right.
Craig's all about Cass. You just don't have a thing there.
She does not do anything for me.
Not even the cuteness factor, man. She's only three.
No. She has his weird ears. No, I don't know. It's just.
There were a lot of weird ears on Star Trek. That's nothing to be prejudiced against.
No, I'm just kidding about that. But no, Cass just seemed kind of not wishy-washy, but just kind of soft and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. Just
so both you got a thing for the softies.
Well, it's not a question of that. It's a question of, you feel like there has to be a reason for somebody's motivation for what they're doing and what is behind the way they're acting. And I just feel like with my choice from Insurrection that I didn't get any of that. I got absolutely no sense of anything other than, will you please talk louder and maybe a little bit faster? Yeah. Cause I just,
hey, she was easy to look at. Not Cass. I'm the, what's her name from,
Anish.
Yes.
Yeah. The many of the other people on the planet were conversing normally. She just was way too laid back for. So
in a strange way, she reminds me of my dad's sister, my aunt. That's all I could think of when I watched that movie.
She was on Star Trek?
Dang, my aunt is in this movie.
No, she wants to be in Picard. So that's
it. Yeah. I'll tell you.
Yeah. And I think,
maybe that was it. Maybe they're just too laid back. Cass was.
Except for Ruafo. He wasn't laid back.
So, I mean, I like Neelix, but Cass.
All right. So you just had your number one, going with your number one draft.
Craig had one and only one. It was no decision made.
Yeah, so Kes was it, but I'll tell you my other two.
Okay.
And one of them was Ensign Roe.
Okay.
You don't like Ensign Roe. I liked her punchiness. I
thought she was too much of a square peg.
That was the point.
I know. I'm just saying. I don't know. I get it, but she didn't do anything.
You probably don't like any of the toys on the Island of Misfit Toys either.
Well, that's my third one. I'm kidding.
So Charlie and Charlie in the box. What's wrong with Charlie in the box? All right, well,
The other one, which is more of a villain, was Shinzon. I hated his character.
Yes.
He was pissed off at Picard, and Picard had nothing to do with the reason he was there other than somebody stole his DNA.
Yeah.
Whose fault is that? Let's take it out on Picard. No motivation. I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, and sometimes I think it's what is the character's motivation, and is it justified enough for you to go, I believe in what this character is doing.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable motivation, wasn't it?
You know, if they had given him a little bit of motivation, all right, I'll put him in the same category that Benedict Cumberbatch was in, where Khan could have not been Khan and just been John Harrison.
Yeah.
And it would have been a fine story. But when they put the Khan in there, it's like, you know, same thing with this. They should have given him a little motivation and not even had him as a clone of Picard. And I think it probably would have worked better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Just some guy who's been beat up in the Romulan mines.
Maybe something that the Enterprise did that inadvertently pissed him off. I don't know. You know, but anyway, that's what I'm getting at.
It speaks more to the writing than the acting, because Tom Hardy's a fine actor in my
actually book. I thought he did fine. If you watch him just in the movie, I think it was just fine acting.
Yeah.
But the whole character itself, Shinzon, I couldn't stand it.
All right. Well, those are our picks. What about you, Chuck?
I'm going after the kids. There were two in Miri that I just cannot stand. John and the redheaded kid. Just, I can't stand watching that episode for those two characters. John is too whiny. You know? But they're grubs, Miri. We can't trust them. You know,
is he the one with the striped shirt?
No, John is the older boy who looks kind of like a John Belushi character.
He's
about Miri's age.
Yeah.
And then the redheaded kid is the one who comes out with that ugly mask, and he's got the bad teeth. They don't even name him. He doesn't have a character. He's just the redheaded child. I think he's the one with the stripes, but I cannot stand those kids in that show.
Fair enough.
Can't tell you what it is. It's just they just drive me nuts.
Yeah, sometimes it's just you don't, you know, when the character is doing stuff, you just go, I can't get into what I'm looking at here. I'm not getting anything out of it.
I will be really curious to see what our listeners come back with on this one.
Indeed. Well, we're putting that out there.
Top that.
So if you have any thoughts on who your least, and I'm sure you do, who's your least favorite character in the Star Trek universe, you can leave us a note over on our Facebook page. The topic is Trek on Facebook. And I will pose that as a normal question over there. But if you just want to leave a comment in the meantime, go right ahead about who you think. The whole universe would be better off without this person ever having been written. You know, this badly written episode. All right. Well, on that high
red shirt
note,
guy number five.
Exactly. Oh, him. Oh, don't get me started on him.
Ensign Gomez.
It's about time to refill the lithium chamber and get on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, over at comedyforecast.com, and that's all one word with the number 4, on Twitter at Comedy Forecast, and on Facebook at Comedy Forecast. I've set up a Comedy Forecast page on MeWe if you're using that service. So you can Instagram, find me a bunch of places under that moniker, if you will. How about you guys?
Where are we again, Craig?
Yeah.
Earth. Oh, wait, we're on a show called Technorama. You can find us, go search the internet for Technorama podcast. You'll find us everywhere. And our website is over at chuckchat.com/Technorama.
Excellent. Ooh, it gets its own ding. Excellent, excellent, excellent.
I'm the king ding, the ding king.
Ding dong.
All right, well, it's time to hit the theme, boys.
There it is.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
Don't put it on the red shirt.
That was like a Kirk version.
I was going to say, we all Kirked that one.
Don't put on the red shirt.
That's the show. Enjoy. Spall.